Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. You know, I guess we learned this week again that race is not over in America. The Supreme Court weakened both affirmative action and the Voting Rights Act in divisive 5-4 votes. Texas and several other states immediately announced that they would impose voter ID laws, widely believed by African Americans and Latinos to be aimed at suppressing their votes. And then there's the Paula Deen story. After it emerged that the butter-pushing, diabetic Food Network star had repeatedly used the N-word at a past job and even designed a plantation-themed wedding for her brother once upon a time, she got fired from her show and lost some of her sponsors. But other sponsors have rallied around her and pledged ongoing support. And guess what? I heard this morning that her book sales have spiked this week. So race as a divisive issue is not over in America, is it? Here's a little of Paula Deen apologizing this week.
I want to apologize to everybody for the wrong that I've done. I want to learn and grow from this. Inappropriate, hurtful language is totally, totally unacceptable. I've made plenty of mistakes along the way, but I beg you, my children, my team, my fans, my partners, I beg for your forgiveness. Please forgive me for the mistakes that I've made.
But nope, said the Food Network, which fired her later that same day that she posted that video. One article that caught our team's eye this week in the midst of all this is on Slate by a writer named Tracy Thompson, author of a new book called The New Mind of the South. And the article is called No, We Are Not All Like Paula Deen. And I'll read from it in a minute. And it inspired us to have this call in today for white Southern women. So if that includes you, if you grew up white and female in the American South, this call-in is for you to react to this week's Paula Deen news, maybe also to the Supreme Court news, to the Texas abortion news, and what it says, any of it, about who you are and also how the media portrays you and how others see you, especially since if you're listening right now, you're probably a white Southern woman who grew up in the South but lives now in the New York area, since that's where most of our listeners are. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And here's a key part of that Tracy Thompson article, again, referring to her cohort of what she calls white Southern women of a certain age. Paula Deen is 60 plus. The article is called No, We Are Not All Like Paula Deen. And she writes, I know exactly where Deen is coming from. The vast majority of white Southerners of her, our generation, were taught a version of regional history that was some variation of the old lost cause narrative, the most important elements of which were that A, the South had fought the Civil War to defend the constitutional principle of states' rights, the aforementioned lost cause, and B, that except for a few bad apples, antebellum slavery had been a fairly benign institution in which many white slave owners considered their darkies as extended family. Generations of Southerners have been fed this folderol, but my generation had the unique opportunity to compare it with events playing out before our eyes. And believe me, there was no possible way to reconcile one with the other. And she goes on, as a group, white Southerners of my generation have been way too easy on the ones of our cohorts who don't seem to get that you cannot magically erase the wrongs of history by cheerfully asserting, as Deen did, that color ain't got nothing to do with it, Deen's words. Race has everything to do with it, Thompson writes, to do with what it means and has meant to be an American. Race is the central conundrum of the American democratic experiment, and the American South has wrestled with that problem more than any other region. That is both its tragedy and its amazing strength and it's why so many white Southerners of my generation cling to our regional identity. But it's time we stop being so darn polite, meaning to the Paula Deans of the world. That from Tracy Thompson in Slate. So with that as food for thought, the phones are open for white Southern women inspired by the news of this week from Paula Dean or Wendy Davis in the Texas legislature, or what I just read by Tracy Thompson, author of that article and of a book called The New Mind of the South. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Melissa in Hoboken, you're on the air. Melissa, thanks a lot for calling in.
Hi, well, thanks for having this subject on.
What are you thinking? Now everybody knows instantly, oh, yeah, she's legit, or a really good actress with accents.
Oh, no. I thought I'd lost my accent. No, I consider myself very similar to the writer from Slate. I was raised by a Julia Sugarbaker, which, for your younger listeners, was a character on Designing Women, who spoke her mind, had a very liberal point of view, but also had all the grace and dignity that comes with being raised well in the South. And I've been here now more of my life than I was in the South, and have come to discover that other people think Southerners are more like Paula Deen than like Wendy Davis. And I'd just like to represent for the Julia Sugarbakers of the South that that tradition is alive and well, and you can live a long life in the South and not run into a lot of Paula Deans, or at least...
You think because there are all kinds of people in the South, like there are all kinds of people everywhere in every group, do you think that you get stereotyped around here?
Oh, very much, very much. And I thought I had lost my accent, but...
but I heard it right away.
With the subject, it's come out a little bit. But yes, no, I experience it all the time. In fact, I had a gentleman I was interviewing when I was a reporter tell me I sounded very intelligent for a Southerner.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Melissa, thanks for starting us off.
Thank you.
Rose in Cortland Manor, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rose.
Hi, I'm so glad you had the subject.
What are you thinking?
I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. I was born in 1961, so everybody up here now knows my age.
If they can
and,
do math.
And to add to the mix, I was raised in Atlanta Jewish community.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, the inheritors of the Leo Frank legacy.
Do you ever hear Robert Klein's bit on Jewish Southerners? He says it just makes no sense to New York Jews. You have somebody over to your Seder, and they say, pass the matzah. And it just doesn't make sense.
Guy that was on Barney Miller?
Because
there's another one, the guy that's Barney Miller, he does his... I don't get Southern Jews. What do they do? Yom Tov, y'all.
Yeah, that's it. That's
yeah.
it.
Well, the point I've been trying to make, and I try to make this to my children all the time, they come home with things from schools and they go, oh, well, you know, the South was just horrible all over. And I said, first of all, the South was not horrible all over. There are a lot of terrific things about the South, and there's a lot of not terrific things about race up in the North. I had far more contact with African American people in the South than I've ever had living up North. It's far more segregated up here in many ways, especially where I am.
Jimmy Carter writes about that, too, and he was from Georgia, too.
Yeah.
And who is angrier, Martin Luther King or Malcolm X?
Right. That's one thing. And I've also come across far more middle class. My father was a lawyer in Atlanta for many years, and half of his business was black businessmen, middle class black businessmen, which were the people I knew. And, you know, with few exceptions, that's not what I mean up here, is that middle and upper middle class, black middle class. And I'm sorry I'm saying black. I know I'm supposed to say African-American, but I'm not that young.
Right. Well, I think it's coming around again.
Yeah. But I say to my kids, you know, they come up and say, well, you know, the Southerners are terrible. I said, really? Ever hear of Watts?
Mm-hmm.
Ever hear of... You know, ever go down to Harlem? Do you think they think that they're in such great shape? I mean, it's not, you know, maybe the South has been demonized a lot in these schools and the kids, you know.
But that is where a lot of Northerners are probably thinking, yeah, but, you know, obviously things were not all hunky-dory for race anywhere in America. But that's where slavery was. That's where the official Jim Crow laws were.
Okay.
So maybe it's different.
I'm a little past Jim Crow. because I was born in 61. Yeah. So when I was growing up, we were in the middle of civil rights.
Not that
my
you
sister
did it,
arguing with my
right,
father.
But that the region has a different history would be the argument.
Yeah. But my point is it's amazing that I will have Northerners walk up to me and to my face say to me, oh, you're Southern. I guess your family must have been really bigoted. And not consider how much of an insult that is.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. Rose, thank you very much. Amanda, you're on WNYC. Hi, Amanda.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good.
I'm calling. I'm in New York right now, but I'm from Texas.
Oh, good. Then you can answer one of the things that's broken out on social media about this whole concept, and that some people are writing in to say, wait, I'm overgeneralizing in my question by bringing Texas into it because Texas is not really considered the South.
Yeah, I mean, I was calling to talk about these tropes of sort of Southern women, but I think, you know, as a Texas woman, I sort of have a different conception of myself being from the South. Like, I feel like, you know, Wendy Davis sort of exemplifies this perfect, like, you know, tough, strong Texas woman. And same thing, maybe look at someone like Ann Richards. And I feel like, you know, my dad taught, you know, as
Molly
much as,
Ivins.
You know, we disagree politically, you know, I feel like, you know, he always encouraged me to, you know, shoot a gun and whatever. Like, he kind of raised me to be this strong Southern woman. So, but I mean, there are your Paula Deans for sure. So.
Do you consider Texas the South, or would that be a misclassification?
I mean, sometimes, you know, it gets thrown in there, but I do think that there are a lot of differences. I think Texas is its own world, you know. So,
Amanda,
yeah.
Thanks so much. Marion in Princeton, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marion.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
Love the subject. I, like Rose, grew up in Atlanta, not only white, but also Jewish. I'm a little bit older than she is. I grew up in the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
My first experience of the word in question, and I won't dignify it by using even the first initial, was as a small child playing with a girl in our neighborhood. And she used that word. It was I didn't understand the meaning of it. I asked her. She described what it meant. I came home, told my parents about it, and they made it very clear that this was an ugly word, a hateful word, and a word I was never to use, and to avoid people who used it. They discouraged me from ever playing with her again. Like Rose, I guess maybe my experience was a little bit different because my family was Jewish. My parents were Holocaust survivors, which added a whole other layer, as you can imagine, and a kind of sensitivity to bias and prejudice of any sort that maybe a lot of people don't have. But I will say that I found lots of friends who were simpatico, who did not come from my particular ethnic background, who were raised in families where such attitudes were considered anathema. I found plenty of people to be friends with growing up in the South who were not Paula Deen. One very close friend whose great-grandfather was one of the founders of the Ku Klux Klan, and she was nothing like this. So there's no excuse, as far as I'm concerned, for Paula Deen to try and justify her behavior.
Do you think that someone with your background has an even stronger reaction, in a way, to Paula Deen because it reflects on you?
I don't feel that it reflects on me. I really don't, although I have to say, like one of your previous callers, first of all, when I graduated high school, I knew I had to get out of the South. I just didn't feel I belonged there. Went as far away as I thought my parents would let me get, which was to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things someone said to me when I opened my mouth and the Southern accent came out, which I still had in those days, was, oh, you're from the South. And I've always considered people from the South to be stupid. And you cannot believe how often I've heard that over the years, just like your previous caller. So, but no, I don't take it as a reflection on me. I take it as a reflection on them.
Marion, thank you very much. And Jessica, I'm sorry, it's Betty in White Plains. Betty, you're on WNYC. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. What are you thinking?
I grew up in North Carolina in the 40s and 50s and 60s, and it I was among people who were very open, and yet at the same time, while they would show a lot of respect for all people, there was a sense of being kind to the domestic workers, whether they were in our homes or in restaurants. And there was a sense when the civil rights movement started that this was something that needed to happen and needed to come. And I was surprised when older white people would ask their domestic help, what do you think of these young blacks stirring things up? And many of them would reply, oh, we don't know what they're up to. They're just stirring up trouble. And that didn't make sense to me as a young person. By the time I was in college, the civil rights movement was progressing. That was in the early 60s. And I went with busloads of African-American young people to the March on Washington in August of 63. And that, at the time, was so moving to me that all of us together were trying to make things better for everyone. And to until then, I didn't really see the inequality. But from then on, I did, and I understood that. And I think a lot of people did. So I'm not sure where the clinging to the Confederate flag and to a pattern of living that was obviously degrading to another group of people. I've not been able to understand that. And those haven't been the people that my family connected with. Oh, and my father was a Southern Baptist minister.
Did his consciousness go from one place to another over time?
I'm sorry, repeat that.
Did his consciousness go from one place to another over time?
Absolutely. Yes, but he grew up in a tradition where there was a lot of respect. So he was one of the first in a little southern North Carolina town to invite Martin Luther King to come speak to the Ministers Association. And he was one of the first to open the doors of our church to all people. And he lost that ministry.
Wow. Can I ask you before you go, since you said that you were at the March on Washington in 1963, the Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream speech is, of course, what that is always going to be remembered for. And people are talking about it again this summer because it's the 50th anniversary.
Yes.
Do you remember hearing the speech and your reaction to it at the time, or were you just too young and there were too many people on the mall and it didn't land as this historic moment that people would talk about forever?
I do remember, and I can see where I was standing at the edge of the steps to the Lincoln Memorial, and I remember at one point having tears in my eyes, hearing him speak and looking down and being shocked at my white arm in a sea of black faces and arms and bodies. I was so with the momentum of the day and of the speech. I'll remember that forever.
Betty, thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome. Thanks, Brian.
And we're not going to get much better than that, right? So why don't we leave it there? There's our call in today for white Southern women. Thanks to so many of you for chiming in. And you can, and by the way, you all think you lost your accents, and none of you have. But you can keep the conversation going at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, still to come this hour. We will continue our summer advice series with Slate's Emily Yaffe, a.k.a. Dear Prudence, who will take your calls. But first, how Chile once got to vote on ousting a dictator and the advertising techniques from that still have echoes today. Stay with us.